Rifle Coffee, baby. Pretty cool.
Ah, that's good. Oh, that's good.
Okay. The coffee from here?
Yeah.
I combine three different bags into one.
Huh?
I combine three different bags into one French press.
Well, I've been drinking fucking Black Rifle Instant, so.
All right.
Which is my least, not my least favorite of our products, but it's not.
You wouldn't choose it for your A game.
No, this is not my A game.
What was that Ecuador stuff that Edwin made us?
I don't know exactly which one he did. But
is that going to be like one of the monthly?
Yeah, we've been messing with these like anaerobics.
Because
the anaerobics are my favorite. Right
that now. Was delicious.
Yeah, it's an anaerobic.
Whew.
It's fermented in stainless steel barrels with different types of fruit. I've tasted the greatest coffee I've ever tasted a week and a half ago. That's
a bold statement, Evan.
It's amazing. It's a citrus. So they let they chop up a bunch of citrus and they mix it in with the coffee as it's fermenting. So it's like the cherries are decomposing, it's fermenting, they leave it in there for like 3 days. It's fucking single greatest fucking coffee I've ever tasted. It's amazing.
Have you ever had the coffee that the ferret shits it out?
Yeah, of course. Edwin and I ordered that to Kabul. And
the bat? No, I haven't heard that one, but there's like a cat or a ferret civets. That shits out. Civets, that's it.
Monkeys do it too, right?
Kopi luwak is the actual term for it.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, it sounds horrible.
It's not, it's supposed to decrease the acidity. It's not.
Does it decrease the acidity?
I mean, you can do that just through the roasting process and selection of bean.
Like, so it's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary to be cruel to animals and leave them in cages and feed them a bunch of fucking coffee so they shit them out. Like, it's unnecessary all the way around.
Just seems unsanitary.
It's gross and unnecessary.
It's like gross and unnecessary.
Yeah. Sometimes you see tracers in your poop, right? Little corn kernels. Like, I don't clean those out and then re-eat them.
The Filipinos love to eat the, they let the chicken manifest in the egg.
The balut.
Balut. Yeah. They love to eat it. And I'm like, it's fucking... I don't like the visual. I'm not saying it's bad. I've just seen, like, I just don't like the visual. It seems unnecessary. Just eat a hard-boiled egg.
We were in Thailand on my first pre-9/11 deployment, and the older guys decided that each of the new guys had to eat a balut. I started projectile vomiting at the smell.
Can you imagine Annie's first trip overseas as a SEAL is to Thailand?
Oh, yeah. Sure you did well.
Yeah. Great decisions were made.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think one of the guys on that trip lost a toe from a motorcycle chain. Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me. My first trip to like was the Philippines, and we're driving out to the training area, or it's like quite a ways out of Manila, and there had been an accident. We were stuck in traffic, and we looked over to the left as we're like working our way through it, and there were two guys that grabbed onto the legs of this guy that was dead in a barbed wire fence, and they were trying to yank his body out of the barbed wire fence. And it was just getting deeper and tangled. And I was watching this, I was like, oh, we're not in America now, are we? Not an appreciation for the dead as there is in America.
Yeah, not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, we're not. We're not in Kansas anymore. Yeah.
Talk about terrible visuals. The wind is at our back, and I think my hair, once it dries, is going to look like a cockatoo.
I think it looks great.
It's going to look like a cockatoo, though. It's going to slowly just go like this.
Tim, the only time your hair has looked good is when you did your fake realismit after our LARPing jump.
Yeah.
We were discussing yesterday, we LARPed on a jump, then he LARPed a realismit.
No. I find that the the term LARPing for what we did is like kind of derogatory.
Yeah.
Like I find it like super kind of like insulting, but I'm also,
yeah, exactly.
I also agree with it.
Yeah.
But I,
what do you think? Like, you think I'm going to throw out a positive term at you?
No, like somebody said in the office the other day, it's like, oh, you're going out on a LARPer. I was like, fuck you. Yeah. Who the fuck are you?
Yeah, but, no.
Like we're still doing a static line jump. Like that's a pretty hard LARP.
You know Oscar Wilde, a bunch of different versions of the quote where he talks about imitation is the finest form of flattery.
Yeah, yeah.
And if there's a group or an era that I would want to imitate, I mean, even if I was a terrible, bad reflection of these men, I'll take it. If I'm shadow, if I'm, you know, like, I will imitate everything and everything they did here in Normandy happily. Call me a LARPer, a cosplayer.
I don't care.
I'm so about it.
In all seriousness, though, those pictures from your reenlistment, which was real, I was fucking joking. For the people, like, I knew it! Stolen Valor, Tim Kennedy. He's not even in the army!
Oh, they're there already.
They are?
Oh, yeah.
For clarity, though.
What organization is he? Like, what is he even in the US? So...
And like, even if you were LARPing, dude, those pictures with, like, the right treatment and aging,
they cannot believe how fucking awesome that moment was. Yeah. And it was the most, one of the most awesome moments of my life.
I was talking about this yesterday, I think, with my wife, because she was talking about the just like the internet in general, you know, like, how do you think they're going to react to this? I'm like, I don't fucking give a shit. Like, living our lives, like, just doing the things that we think are really epic and cool, and just putting it out there for other people to live vicariously through it, and not in a negative way. It's not, we're not saying, like, hey, look at us, how cool we are. We're saying, like, look at these unique opportunities. And what I love about that is, like, Tim's just doing Tim. Like, that's the thing I told my wife. It's like, Tim just does Tim. And if people like it, great. If they don't like it, great. But that's fucking confidence. It's like, you know what? You just go out and you do you, man. And, like, it's so fucking cool to watch, because there's so many people that live these, like, sheltered fucking existences where they're so afraid to do anything that might be outside of what is socially or perceived as socially acceptable. And they're, like, almost being intimidated into just not going out and having fun. I'm like, the premise of this for me was to put a bunch of people together that I love, right? Come out here and, like, truly celebrate the event in history in a way that's a confluence of multiple different things, right? So it's a very complex intellectual and emotional thing that we're doing, because for me, it's about sharing it with my kids. Like, first and foremost, like, number one is, like, my kids had to be here. Like, they have to be here. They have to participate in this with me. They've got to see it. And even if they can't emotionally understand it, I don't care. Yeah. Like, being part of this, like, feeling the seriousness of it at times, but also feeling the levity. Like, you have to have fun, because part of this to me is like it's paying respect to the men that went out and not only accomplished this, but the dead is living free and having fun is what the intent was. Like, under the fucking iron cage of fascism, with, you know, the evil that they represented, there's no way this could have happened. And, you know, we went out and did this recreationally. Like, we did this voluntarily. We did this because we wanted to do it. And we had this fucking barbecue on the DZ, and we were, like, right on top of their battery, and we're, you know, I took my kids through the entire thing, and, like, people are, you know, eating ice cream and having a barbecue, and, like, guys
raw
are jumping, and, like, yeah, raw hamburgers. And it's like, it's so French, by the way, because it's kind of fucked up. You know, it's like disorder. They had one composting toilet
for several thousands of people.
For several thousands of people. They had no traffic organization whatsoever.
And Mrs. Stark is walking around 8 or 7 months pregnant. Yeah. And, you know, like, with her bladders being compressed by 40 pounds of baby. And she's like, I'm just going to hold it. Because there's no way I'm going to go to that bathroom.
There's no way. And they're like, one freaking toilet.
One road in. No parking. Madness.
Like, but I'm like, I'm like relishing in this experience, because I can't think of a better representation of for the accomplishment. Is like, pay the respect. Like we owe, I think, the proper representation to bring it back to the community and so show them what we did.
Yeah.
But also to do it our way, in the way like you wanted to do it your way.
I did.
Incredibly fucking cool. Like, so happy to have been a part of it. And then it's part party, part cosplay, part history. Like, there's all these things coming into this. It just didn't fucking disappoint.
Yeah, we were playing with, like, words, trying to, like, respect, pay homage, tribute, celebrate. Like, what is the right thing for what this is and what this was? And truly, it's like a combination of all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, I absolutely want to celebrate the greatest generation, what they did on June 6, 1944, you know, 80 years and 2 days ago. I definitely want to pay tribute to them. I want to give respect for not just their heroism and their courage and their bravery, you know, but... you know, there was a commander, sir, that signed that risk assessment.
Yeah.
It was like, do you know what? You know, you're
I don't think it was a commander. I think there was a few more stars.
Yeah.
I think that one might have went all the way to the top.
It was like, you should expound on, like, that numbers game where they looked at it from Denmark all the way down. I mean, even into the Baltic was considered into invasion points. But from Denmark all the way down to the French and Spanish border of where they were going to make their invasion. That is a gigantic Atlantic-facing indefensible position for the Germans. But, you know, from Dover, which is the closest place to cross, where they finally landed right there on Omaha, Utah, it was a numbers game. And
it was.
If you take the emotion out of it, I understand the numbers, but the numbers are people. Those are Americans that were going to climb off a ship and clamber into a boat and come onto a beachhead that they knew had been set for 3 years to be defended.
Or jump out of a plane that was barely being structurally held together or was on fire because of the amount of anti-aircraft fire. With maybe you're over your DZ, maybe you're not. Yeah.
Most of the time it's not.
Most of the time it's not.
Yeah. Like too low, too fast.
Yeah. A lot of too fast.
Yeah.
That would be a hard decision to make. I'm assuming the bottom line on that risk assessment probably was the president, but is from the commanders, from the people on the boats who probably, like the commander on the boat who was never going to be in one of the landing craft. Can you imagine watching those souls though, like climb over and knowing what you just committed them to?
Yeah.
Like, fuck, man. You want to talk about scrambling your eggs?
I've often thought about this, like Eisenhower, from like Eisenhower's perspective, and there's a couple different books that I think are directly referenceable here, which is like D-Day by Ambrose. I think it's probably one of the most detailed invasion books that you can get. And Ambrose is like, he does a fucking incredible job, and it has like, I mean, I don't know if he's still alive, but all of his books are really great. But I mean, envisioning, you know, Eisenhower, and there's these, the weeks leading into this, like there's not only the logistics and the preparation from the men, tactics and equipment, but there's also like, they don't know, they're looking for a weather window that might or might not exist. Yep. And so if he misses this weather window, by the way, it's 2 weeks, another 2 weeks, but then it also pushes the entire fucking thing that they've been prepping for 2 more weeks. And then you might end up kicking the can on this invasion much longer to a different point.
Yep.
He had 2 letters written. He had one for success and one for failure. And like, that guy, with just the sheer weight and gravity from what he's thinking about, from the planning, the direct calls with, you know, the president. I mean, these are guys that are meeting with Winston Churchill, with the president now, but also inject Stalin and some of these other guys, because the Russians were pushing them to invade even faster. Yeah. They wanted them in earlier. They've got to have them in now. So he's got like all these external political pressures, and he knows this isn't a guarantee. He doesn't know going into this that they're going to be able to take the beach. And then the failure point of this is essentially his resignation. It's like, if I fail here, which is not only I have dedicated the resources and the souls, and if we don't take the beach, we might not take Europe.
Yeah.
Period. Now what happens? Like, so I mean, this guy's not only thinking about this specific day, this specific beach, He's also thinking, if we don't do this, which is a possibility, what fucking happens next?
Yeah. Meanwhile, in the modern era, people are turning down targets because they don't have multiple ISR platforms and three AC-130s overhead.
Yeah.
Doesn't look safe.
Yeah, every AOD commander out there that got a con off, there's like, man, I'm not really happy with
QRF's 15 minutes away. Yeah. Unacceptable.
Oh, unacceptable.
I'm not sure there's a book called The New Rules of War. And just in like the opening introduction, it talks about if America has the appetite to wage what actual war is.
Right.
Because we haven't. We've been fighting these gentlemen wars playing by rules that our adversaries are not playing with. Mm-hmm. And then the American population not understanding how horrific really that war is. Like, I don't know if there is, I know our young men and women have the courage to step up and answer the call if it comes. But like the American population are so pathetically, not just inept of understanding, but like emotionally hardened to the realities of what war looks like. I don't know if we can win a war the way that wars are going to be fought, you know, fighting corporations, fighting cartels, fighting proxies and proxy nations with proxy militias, with drones that are being flying put into civilian populations, with enemies that are hiding inside of hospitals and schools. Like this is the way that war is now.
Yeah.
And the enemies that we're going to fight. And I know America so desperately wants the maneuver war of 1944.
Yeah.
We're just never going to get it again. We're never going to have that again.
No. No, what I've been calling these is they're wars of choice. They're actually not wars for that.
Wars of choice.
You can't.
That's cool.
There's no other way for us to frame up World War II and say this was a necessity to national sovereignty. This was not a war of choice. We had to do it. We had to do it in order to maintain our existence as a nation. These wars of choice that we've been in for, you know, multiple decades, you know, you could argue since World War II, and you could say, well, these are low intensity conflicts, and you know, there's all the historical reference points that we could say, you know, why do we go into Vietnam? Ultimately, it was a war of choice because, you know, the domino effect in their minds was real, right? So in their mind, they were really combating and trying to put a wall against communism. If you read and watch anything from inside the war rooms of McNamara, you know, the guys that were Kennedy and McNamara and Johnson and everybody, and what they were talking about was they really felt communism was going to go internationally, and they felt like they were in a war of national sovereignty, a non-hot war, and that low intensity conflict would provide enough pushback to stop the domino effect. This is like a real thing.
Yeah.
So the zero sum game of like, this is a cold war that we're in against the Soviets. And I try not to be so cynical and be is a skeptic and also try to be as objective as I can, because I just came out, if we think about it, like I just came out of World War II. This was a fight for our lives, mm-hmm. like the existence of our nation. The Soviets are beating down our doorstep. There's no, in all of our analysis and everything that we've done, there's no other way around. The Soviets are coming for us. So in their mind, they're like, there's no fucking way we can go to hot war because it's going to be a nuclear war and we're going to fucking destroy the world. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is try to provide at least pushback from a low intensity conflict perspective in Southeast Asia. I think they fucked it up. Now, I mean, we could talk about like strategically and militarily and how they actually did it, but I don't necessarily disagree with the way that they were thinking of it.
Now, Patton had two, I mean, obviously in April of 1945, mm-hmm. May 8th is when, you know, we said this war's over. But April, we're in Berlin.
Yeah.
Russia has fought into Berlin. We have fought from the coast to Berlin, and this is where the wall is erected. And everything that Russia had done as they moved west from the east, from the Eastern Front, they then said, this is Russia. And I mean, they effectively did the same thing of conquered as they were fighting back the Germans. Mm-hmm. Patton said two very clever things. One was we should just keep going all the way to Moscow. And the other thing that he said is he hinted at intentionally delaying the invasion so that there was more loss on the Eastern Front side, making the enemy that we were going to fight post-May of 1945 more vulnerable to us continuing to push east and actually give back the sovereignty to each of those nations that as Russia moved west to Berlin, they just ultimately took control of and they never gave back.
I don't disagree with his position. I actually don't.
No, neither do I.
I think if they would have just swallowed it, you know, you think about the low-end estimate from the Russian casualties from the war was 11 million. They were eviscerated. They were completely eviscerated and on their heels.
That's like six or seven states total population of the U.S. combined.
This is wild.
The only way
tiny states.
The only way they were able to penetrate that far, you know, some people say militarily they would have continued to go because they had picked up the industrial aspects, but they had picked up the industrial aspects of the war and generate enough inertia to move west because we were largely supporting their logistics efforts in order to do that. So if we chop that away and then we continue to push, I don't think we would be in the same situation we have today.
No,
I just don't. Because you would eliminate that foe. You don't go into the Cold War. You've essentially stabilized to the best part of Europe. Now we can discuss whether or not individual countries in Europe start to fall apart and how much intervention that would have been, which would have been, might have been an even bigger.
It is kind of rad now. The countries that have been liberated from Russia's control and are sovereign countries, the Estonias, the Latvias, the Czech Republics, Poland, they are now like passionately sovereign.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, they, for small GDPs, they are all about like, don't mess with us. We want to be left alone. We are Estonians. You know, it's cool. So like, I don't know. It's easy to play that armchair quarterback the following day, but.
Well, man, I think
what a war.
But I think that's part of like the, like I would rather play armchair quarterback and discuss historical possibilities then fucking watch football and we'll get into statistics on how like how many you know touchdowns some dickhead had. I don't give a flying fuck about any of that. Like it's so like exhaustingly ridiculous to me that like people get into these things, which by the way is like I don't really care. Like this is way more interesting to me is from a like what if things that you could think about.
I just all this, the spectacle of our current media and attention by this generation looking into, you know, the Kardashians or sports. Mm-hmm. Every time I see a headline on what I thought at one time was a legitimate publication, newspaper, and I just think about the circus in Rome. I just think about the Colosseum and the sole purpose of it was to distract the populace from what was really occurring, which was extreme corruption. And it kind of like breaks my heart. Again, not makes me angry, but it's breaks my heart a little bit. Being like, man, when are people going to realize that they're just being distracted from what we should be talking about, which is what we're talking about, freedom, sovereignty, you know, the ability to understand what a government should do and why they should do it. Like we're sitting in Normandy. The beach is right there. You know, like we're like quintessentially the questions, the answers to those questions that were executed by like the baddest dudes ever. It's freaking awesome.
I don't know if an entire population's ever going to wake up. I think it's probably always been the case that it was a small minority. 80-20 principle.
So. Yeah, Pareto's principle. Yeah. I think.
I'll take 20%.
Yeah, 20% is a great. If you just think about like the issues that we face and people and what they think is important, you know, this entire, you know, woke narrative, and I don't want to turn this into some like negative thing, but I'm just like, it's a disservice to the sacrifice of what people have actually sacrificed. Like the real courage, wisdom, like real human virtue when we get distracted and we start participating in this like circus sideshow, like freakish conversations about what defines male or female, which are, by the way, should be completely confined to academia in the pursuit of just like trying to have complex dialogue. I have no problem with that. But when you try to populate it and then push it across, you know, international borders and national borders, and you start to distract people away from, you know, what is important? Like, how do you become wise? How do you become virtuous? Yeah. How do you build a great nation? How do we define freedom? What does democracy look like? But then we have like, you know, fucking elderly people that are like sucking up these, you know, Senate and congressional, you know, presidential perspectives from a political point of view. And it's like, we can do so much better. And it's even the sideshow that we're getting ready to go into as far as like a presidential debate or presidential elections, which are like, we should have some of this shit so far in our rear view,
yeah,
and start thinking about like, what does it mean to be, who is a great leader? Like, I'll tell you one thing, the guy that came out here and tried to politicize this event, there's nothing in that entire empty suit that I would classify as leadership. Like, there's nothing, which, by the way, I'm not saying every president has been a great leader, but good fucking God, so disheartening when people fail to what I think is properly pay the amount of respect that needs to be paid from the acts of courage that have saved our nation. And then you have these like pants shitting, empty headed fucking retards that grandstand and... I don't know. I shouldn't get too far negative. It's just I see it just like really.
I just want to know who disgusting. The staffer was. Well, who was the staffer that was like, you know what we should do on the 80th anniversary of Normandy, the D-Day invasion, as you're standing where the on Point de Hoc, where the Rangers scaled the cliffs, we should take our current hot topic
and
issues
discuss it
and discuss it from that podium.
The problem is that, you know, it wasn't just a staffer. Like, no. There was not one person that was able to write that and get it to where somebody voices that. I mean, what it means is that there's a large team of people that are pushing that.
Yeah.
It's more than just one person. And I think that's what's, to me, at least more disheartening. Like, if that's the melting pot that is creating that final recipe, and what we get is the taste of what they're brewing up, I don't think that speaks well for what's going on there, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
Oh.
If I have to give the address to mail the box.
One date.
Timothy, we're trying to
I know.
Be just, professional here.
But I just got the like, hey, mail, give me the address.
Who'd you get that from?
Jove.
He can go fuck himself.
I got 2 seconds.
You know, one date. Just one date out of the year. You know, just pay proper respect to people. Just non-politicize an event.
Yeah.
Just fucking pay respect. Like, that's all I'm asking dudes to do. Yeah. That's it. I don't think that's too much for me to ask from
it's
politicians.
Actually not, it's not
like
hard
one
either.
Fucking day.
It's not hard. You want to talk about low hanging fruit? That'd be like the base of the tree.
It's just like, that's all. That's all you need to do. Like, stand on a stage. Like,
and dudes are sitting right there.
Yeah, they're sitting right there.
They're right there.
It's like, so,
those dudes
are so fucking disgusting.
Running down the beach or they climb the cliffs and like, they're right there, man. And oh, you went up there and you thought your great idea was, you're like, you know what we should do? We should talk about like some problem that America is having politically.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Like, just.
By the way, I'm like, you know, like, to shift it back into, I think they're like non-political. Like, it's part of this whole thing is like, you know, coming out here and being able to represent what I feel is like improperly pay respect and, you know, not turn it into anything other than like, this is a true, just act to give back to the community in a way that's like, show people what this is like, provide value back to, I think, the people that, you know, watch the podcast and follow, you know, everybody here and do it right.
Yeah.
Like, just do it right. Like, you know, Can we share what your
mission was for this trip? You've defined it to us.
Before that, though, do you find it hard, Evan, to critique the political party that you've supported for years?
Yeah, I feel
through financial donations.
So as Black Lives, I love this. Like, this is so funny, right? It's like my $500 donation to Tulsi. By the way, who's
Tulsi?
Like, to Tulsi, that's the one, right? Like, it's so funny, man.
I got so many messages. Like, did you know that Black Lives is supporting? Us? Like, you are the dumbest.
Nope. Okay, stay positive here, Tim.
Stay positive.
You are the
Hold on a second. Okay.
$500 yeah. in Tulsi.
But you have revisited this multiple times during our entire trip here, but leading up, you kind of set a mission statement for this trip. You wanted us to be a carrier, like the cracker, to what is the experience? The delivery system is...
A cracker?
Yeah, like if I'm going to eat caviar...
Or that's the best thing that you could come up with is a cracker?
A delivery system.
It's a delivery system.
Couldn't be like a fucking China, like a nice
like
fine China plate.
Like salad is a delivery device for ranch.
Yeah. If we were the potato chip.
that would be way below cracker.
I guess.
You wanted everyone to understand, and as best we can, experience what it feels like to be here during D-Day.
Yeah.
Veterans, Americans. So like if that's like the succinct mission... Okay, how do you do that? You reminded us time and time again, man, I know we're getting content. I know we're like filming stuff and doing things, but take time to feel and experience what it feels like to be here. Look at the French people celebrating. Look at all the Americans and veterans that flow over here. Look at all the different military organizations that came to support this event. Take it in, intellectualize it, and then try and communicate that back so people vicariously can experience what it is like here. That is a really beautiful thing that you did. From a mission standpoint, like, holy crap, talk about like Black Rifle as an organization to do something like that. And we're talking a couple $100,000 to execute this mission. And that is insanely rad. And then my mission then, if those are my orders, are to come here and experience this and to pay, overwhelmed time and time again, standing at the beach, crying as I can't even put words into my mouth and then try to communicate that back. Like, the best part was, Andy and I are here in this house across the street from the beach, and, every day we'd be in that water. Every day we'd come back, drink coffee, have Italian wine, or have French wine, and we just talk about what happened that day.
Yeah.
And try to process these overwhelming experiences.
For clarity, I did not get in the water.
That's not true.
I did one time.
He did one. Oh, one he time. Is so the Navy SEAL of
First
the
off,
group.
There's no phobia. It's disdain.
Yeah.
Hydro disdain.
Hydro disdain.
And the one time that he walked in there, his face was just like this.
Like, fuck.
It's just so hard.
I just went to my waist.
Like, this entire, we could just say, hey, we're going to take Andy. This is what it was. We're just going to take Andy to Normandy to get him to feel. That'd be cool. Let's see if we can get him to feel some shit.
I feel on the inside, Evan.
Fuck. My wife.
Fuck all of you.
My wife, after meeting you for the first time, she like gets back in the car and she's like, so is Andy just never really animated? I was like, yeah, that's his whole thing. He doesn't really.
I feel like I am.
Huh?
I feel like I am.
Yeah. I mean, not really.
Am I not?
I mean, like the spectrum of 10 being like a really gregarious, outgoing.
Yeah, only you are at a 10.
Okay. I'm
He's like at a 12.
Okay.
50. You are.
If
like,
you're the top end of what's possible, then yeah, I'm at a zero.
Okay. Yeah, you're at a zero.
Maybe it's like a contrast yeah. with Tim around. You're even more subdued.
Yeah, I'm like a corpse in the corner. Just like.
Everybody's like a corpse in the corner with fucking Tim around.
I feel like I have a natural emotional range.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not, yeah. not so really natural.
It doesn't come across.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it might happen in here or maybe in here. I still think your soul is dead.
That's possible. Question is, when did it die?
And how?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know.
How did it die?
I think I feel deeply.
Yeah, you probably
do.
Yeah.
He was trying to decide in the act of death by suicide in a wingsuit if he could go through a car as a missile, as a human missile, or through a crowd at like an air show or like on the drop zone. If there's just like one person that he had been irritated by,
that he could just pinpoint him.
What you're saying is lacking like an extreme amount of contest.
Are you denying that this conversation occurred?
What I said was...
That's what you said. That was this morning over coffee.
Yeah, that's about right.
What I said was, I had thought about, if you were going to kill yourself out of an airplane, could you go through somebody's windshield driving? Yeah. And yeah, if so, what would the impact have been? Or if you were going to do it at an air show and you could get a track going, could you leave like a snowplow into there? I'm not saying I'm going to.
No, I see what you're saying.
This is why I'm never going to feel around you guys again, because I shared my inner thoughts, and you're now, the world is now going to judge me for my inner thoughts, which will strip me of even more ability to feel.
Andy's like feelings by Andy. That should be a totally separate. This should be a totally separate show. Feelings by Andy, right? I think it's.
I feel just fine.
Yeah, I know. Like I totally
understand. Couldn't believe I feel like I had met Kate before. She was like boisterous when we showed up. She's like, "You're real."
Yeah, you're real.
And I was like, "I think so."
You're real.
Yeah.
Like
he's definitely real.
Yeah, he's something.
Maybe like, I feel the deepest out of all of us.
I feel like it's super funny because I got to explain a thing that I saw last night where Andy has been bullying the producer here for a solid several days where he just he just tells him, "That's mine. That's mine now." So he has some flip-flops and Andy's like, "Hey, why are you wearing my flip-flops?" And he's like, "Wait, what are you talking about? These are my flip-flops." And Andy's like, "Those are my flip-flops. Or how about I just hold you down until I get tired or something," right? Was that the summary of it?
Yep.
And so he ends up kicking his flip-flops off and giving them back to Andy, which I think is funny because he thinks Andy's being very serious. And then so when he rotates around and walks away, Andy's like laughing completely fucking hysterically. But he doesn't know. He doesn't know if like Andy's really going to fold him up into a fucking pretzel.
That was amazing.
He put his bed against his door the other night. So again, fuck you guys, because I'm going to share a conversation you started.
Dove walks out with a sock full of rocks last night, because we were talking about a blanket party.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's out in
Meanwhile,
front.
Leah was like, "Don't do what you're about to do."
Yeah, well, she told him outside as he's putting rocks into his sock, and he's like, "Yeah, this will work." I'm like, and Leah's like, "No, this is not going to go the way that you think it's going to go."
No.
And then he comes inside with a sock full of rocks and is standing outside of Andy's door. And Leah's still like trying to wave him off. Like, no.
He starts swinging it. He goes like, "Hey, whenever you're ready."
No. Why would he do that?
Because he's adorable.
Yeah,
and he's,
he is.
Where the inception of his idea, though, came from the night previously when he had come down from a nap fully disheveled. And we were in the middle of a discussion about being disappointed about not being able to find bar soap that we could put into a sock and go into his room and beat the shit out of him. Yeah, we were talking about a blanket party to Dove that he came down in the middle of, which did not stop our conversation.
Of course he did.
What are you talking about?
He was texting JT and people in the middle of the night like, "Is this blanket party thing real?" He slept with his bed against the door because he thought we were going to come for him.
He was asking me, he was like, you know, he's like, "Well, okay, Is this real? You know, what do you think about this?" I'm like, "Hey man, like you're on your own here.
This is Lord of the Flies.
This is I don't know what to tell you, man. Like maybe find a good hide site, build yourself a little place to sleep somewhere else. I'm just saying, you live in a house with Andy and Tim. I don't know. I can't help you. I can't help you from afar. I'm 40 minutes away. Like I can give you maybe some tools and techniques. Maybe think about." Like a good spot where they would be too lazy to check. Maybe on a roof. You know?
Six houses here for everybody. Yeah. And Dove assigned. I just want to go back in time to him sitting there over a spreadsheet as he's assigning people different houses. He's like, "Do you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna put myself with Tim and Andy." Yeah.
He made that the decision the day that we got here before you the day before you arrived. He was drive. He picked up because Leah and I got routed through fucking LAX from Montana to come to Paris. Right. Super direct. You always should start an east trip by going west.
100%.
He was here, was awesome though, waited for us, took us in the, what was it? I don't know, 4.5 hour car ride. And as we were doing, he's like, "I think there's an extra room, so I'll just stay with you guys." He didn't know. No. It was unknown what he was getting himself into.
Yeah. Well, he knows now.
God bless him.
God bless him.
Yeah.
like that guy. I want to do lots of stuff with him because he's fun. Yeah.
I look forward to the next thing. I think the next
What is the next thing?
I think we should do the elk hunt like together this fall. Oh, but the next thing, like I've got to go to
fast enough to that.
I've got to go to like I'm gonna go to the Somme, so I'm gonna check out some of the World War One stuff here before I leave. But I'm gonna go check that out. But I think the Pacific, like Peleliu. I gotta like
so I host, go to Peleliu. So I hosted a guy
read the book.
You'll be into this.
Well, the Old Breed.
Oh yeah. It's one of my favorite books.
You'll like this because you're a diver. I hosted a guy from Project Recover, one of the founders of Project Recover, mm-hmm. and they go to Peleliu for about 2 weeks at a time, and they dive on the aircraft, mm-hmm. and they're able to identify, their goal is to identify missing, which how anybody is still categorized as missing at this point is,
right.
I don't understand the categorization schedule there, or KIA, but they've been able to find dog tags, photos, in like cockpits. And so if they
Seriously?
Find, yeah, no, so they dive on these wrecks. So they go all over the place and they're looking for wrecks, but what they need are qualified divers who are competent, right? Yeah. It's like warmer water, 60 for, you know, 60 for 60 type stuff. There is certain criteria and people that will
like mixed gas stuff or?
No, just pure air. Huh. But I just know how much you like the water and diving. But then the cool thing is they follow it all the way to bringing these things back to the family.
Ooh. Oh, wow. That's great.
That funerals, cool. like the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Like that would be an incredible trip. Like, I mean, the Old Breed.
But it's in Peleliu, in those areas.
Yeah, dude.
Old Breed is like, because you have very distinctly different wartime experiences between those, you know, between the Europe and the South Pacific. But, you know, from a grunt's perspective, when you're looking at just general war fighting, you know, we were talking about it yesterday. It's, you know, these guys were stationed in Britain before they, you know, moved across the channel, regardless of whether it's like an airplane or a boat. And you could find some recompense from your combat experience because, you know, you look around and this place is beautiful, right? It's absolutely fucking beautiful. It's green. It's, you know, the architecture is amazing. Like it's fucking beautiful. And so I could imagine, yes, you're fucking terrified. And yes, it's fucking combat. And yes, 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 all of those things check out. But there's also like, you could find a nice little shady spot beside a freaking rock wall and catch a fucking nap without getting, you know, the smell of rotting fucking corpses and mud and fucking humidity and bugs. Like everything in the jungle, everything in the South Pacific is trying to fucking eat you. Yeah.
Here, bite you, stab you.
Yeah.
The environment geographically is horrific.
Yeah.
And I'm not by any way, shape, or form saying that it was not the most brutal, horrible fighting here in Europe. The fighting against the Japanese
is different.
Was different.
Yeah.
And
there's nothing on Peleliu. When you think about like that island or any of these things, like they poison the water. This is like, you know, sand flies, freaking mosquitoes and jungle. And like, you think about like the crocs are fucking eating dudes, right? And I think that's Peleliu, like, depending on where you were. But I mean, definitely like in some of the places like Guadalcanal, like fucking well, like, there, they could hear crocs eating the dead bodies below their fighting positions. You know, Japanese, there's nothing on the island except for death, destruction, mud, stench, violence. Like there's nothing there. Yeah. There's no element where you can have like a moment, I think, away from hell. Like there truly isn't. Whereas like here, I think you could have found different moments, like disconnect from your fucking hell and plug into like, oh, that's a fucking beautiful farmhouse or something. There's fucking nothing. Peleliu. There's nothing.
Right. And every village town that they liberated here, you know, they're being celebrated as victors and liberators. You know, like the beautiful European women are walking out with bottles of wine and cheese and flowers. And like, oh, you did that. Yeah. Like, that doesn't bring emotion out of you, Andy. I don't know what would. Not there. Not
you back down to the six, Timothy.
Yeah.
Not in Peleliu.
Yeah. Not, I reside at the nine. Sometimes I
would go a little higher, but
not in Peleliu. No. Like I think they had very distinctly different. Well, they did. They had very distinctly different experiences. And it's like, you can read those books and I think I think there's something to be said about that too. It's like in an era of digestible media that everything is consumed in 15-second to, you know, 3-minute forms vertically through a phone, like actually picking up a analog book and feeling the actual flip of a paper page and actually having to read through something line by line. There's an extreme amount of value to this. I think there's also part of me wants to make sure that people understand, like, our job is to, you know, provide people an in-depth look and try to give them something of value through this. And it's not my job to create, like, nor will I, it's to, like, create clickbaity bullshit. Like, there's plenty of other companies and other people that can do that. I've long surpassed the incessant need to try to, like, drive traffic based on gaslighting or salacious things as far as being able to market or advertise a product through what I would see as disingenuous, non-ethical means. The company is big enough, and we've been successful enough because of the customers, because of people. Like, we can go out and make, like, what I feel are deep and meaningful pieces that create real value in people's lives, develop and execute against a product schedule where it's like, right, let's keep the party rolling. But I don't need to devalue our brand by participating in fucking bullshit marketing schemes. I know I can create the things I want and get really deep. And when I say it's like, I marketing is one of those things that you can, like, execute on across the board. And I see it. Like, trust me when I see it. I see, like, you know, a lot of other veteran so-called, you know, forward companies. And, you know, I refuse to sink the brand to any level where I have to make somebody else look bad so I can try to generate revenue. Yeah. I don't need to do that. Like,
last night before I went to bed, I was just scrolling through the stuff that has been put out the past week here.
Yeah.
2 weeks leading up to it, Black Rifle was going through historical footage. Not editing, but, well, they were editing. They're sincerely putting together an idea about what was happening in that moment of time. Mm-hmm. And it was really easy to understand. So from 2 weeks ago all the way up to D-Day, it was almost like D-minus 14, yeah, D-minus exactly. 13, yep. D-minus 12, yeah. All the way up to end. And then it was just like, okay, guys, what are you experiencing as we're D-minus 2, D-minus 1, D-Day? And like that's literally what I did before I went to bed last night. It's just kind of like shutting down a little bit and scrolling through just the things that had been posted. And you can just go through 2 weeks and they're 90-second clips of what happened here. And it was powerful. It was compelling. It was not politicized. There was no clickbait. It was just like, man, experience how meaningful this moment was 80 years ago. And if you cannot understand this, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you. And
you didn't say that. Like, that didn't happen to BRCC things. No. But it was like, you need to understand this. And then me was like, and if you can't, then you're dumb.
Aff described the internet really well. I think we were at lunch.
That was great.
When we ordered the
me some Aff.
Kilo of beef, ribs for two, which we ordered as a singular plate.
She's like, bro, two persons. I was like,
oui, but for un.
One. There was like two.
This much meat left between both of the plates.
Yeah. Aff was saying, though, and we'll all recognize this from when we grew up, like, you know, you're in the 90s and you're going to 7-Eleven, and there's a clearly crazy person who's maybe wearing their tidy whities on the outside of their pants, right? Talking about how the clown has no penis, right? You, because you can see and interact, realize that what the crazy person is saying, well, regardless of what they say to you, you don't grab onto it because you're like, fuck, this is clearly an unhinged or crazy person.
This is a meth head.
The internet.
This is a wizard that lost his magic.
Yeah, failed wizard. The internet strips you of your ability to see where the information is coming from.
It's a brilliant perspective.
Yeah, and so you have no idea. And I, like, you'll put a post up. I'm sure this happens to everybody. 99 positive comments, one negative one, which will get more of your attention than the 99 positive. Yep. It's like this bias that we probably have evolutionarily to look for things that are wrong, so we, whatever it may be. But if it was a man wearing his underwear on the outside of his pants, he wouldn't grab onto it.
But you that's have, who the one person is.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe. Or they just don't agree with you. Yeah. Either of which, it's that inability to determine where the information is coming from that it fucks with people. So I think the approach of like, we're going to put this out there.
Yeah.
And if it lands with you, it lands with you. If it doesn't land with you, it doesn't land with you. But for the right reasons. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah. The internet is a wild environment. I get caught up in that too. And because you want to argue with people. And I would never argue with the dude who literally used to sit outside the 7-Eleven where I grew up.
You'd be like, keep your shopping cart. I'm going to go get back in my car and I'm going to run from you. But any word that you said, I'm never going to listen to. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm also going to distance myself from you. But now we're living in an era where that person has digital access to me, my businesses, and to all of the people that I interact with and to my customers. Yeah. Like, what a jacked up system. And even worse is that the actual systems, the way that the algorithms work is they promote that negative idea or the negative concept because then people interact with it. And when people are interacting with it, they spend more time on that medium. And when they're spending more time on that medium, they're easier to market to.
It's a super unhealthy environment.
And I think it changes their behavior from who they would normally be. And I think that's the worst part about it. Whether they mean to or not, it changes. They won't say something that they wanted to, or they will say something that they didn't really believe. And it gets worse.
Never seen something so positive as I have this past week. Yeah. I texted you guys last night. I was like, did you guys look?
Which we did right after. But
I very rarely go into comment section because I think it's super unhealthy, everything that happens in and down there.
I come into yours sometimes.
You do go, have you seen what he does?
No.
So
does he comment on your shit?
Yes, he'll go in there and people don't know him.
This sounds great.
And he starts trolling both me and my fans and sometimes a troll, but nobody knows which one it is.
Are you serious?
And
there was a time where one of his posts had 600 comments, 400 of them were response to mine.
Or responses to him. Like he just went in there and he just like drop a nuclear bomb and then like they come in there and then it just stokes some fire to this. And I do like the litmus test of, okay, man, are we doing the right thing? Because your mission from the get-go was the right thing. But what is the effect on target?
Yeah.
And this is anecdotal data, but we were able to just take a real quick snapshot and be like, holy crap, I've never seen such positive reaction to a mission or to a piece of content as I've seen this past week. And so then, like, if that is our data, just a little snapshot, not our exclusive data, where we can be like, hell yeah.
You didn't even need the comment section for that. Like, this whole trip was just awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything left on my bucket list, to be honest. I had delayed this one.
Yeah.
We had talked about this.
Yeah.
I knew I had wanted to come, like, walking through that cemetery yesterday. Fuck, man. And again, maybe I don't show it on the outside, but like walking up and being able to touch the marble, fuck. And just seeing all the names and 45 brothers, you know, paired up next to that, like, or the going into the, I don't want to, is it the Tomb of the Unknown? I know is in Arlington. What do they call it here?
So it's just
essentially the same thing.
Yeah, it's a gravestone known only to God.
Yeah. It's, I mean, fuck. What a powerful experience. You don't need the comment section to let you know that what we're at least I think trying to do to
there
show
so
people
cool
the power.
Things happening yesterday. I know it was like wildly heavy. You see on those crosses the coins that were up on top that each stand for like how you knew this person or if you're in their unit or if you served with them or if you're like a connection to them in some way. Each one of those coins means something. And then
Af told me that. I didn't understand. I was like, why are people putting like loose change on this stuff? It doesn't make sense.
And then some of them, there's like this brown, beautiful, speckly gold background.
It's sand. They rub sand.
Yeah, it's sand. Sand from where the person died. So they get the sand, they rub it into the gravestone, and they wipe it off with a sponge. And like that hit me super heavy because you're looking out and there's lots out here. And then you see like one that has that brown gold, another one that has that brown gold, and then you're like, and then you look for it for a second, you're like, oh, all right, that was a lot. Yeah. You're like, I didn't anticipate.
Dude, the one that got me the most was the, you know, here lies somebody known only to God.
Yeah.
Just
there are
not that there's a
so
great,
many of them.
Yeah,
there.
Not that there's a great way to go out, right? Especially in a ballistic environment, but
so that was an Allied soldier that died
somewhere alone
and
scared,
nobody knows who
and
he
in
is.
Pain.
Yep,
there and was, is faceless and nameless through history.
That's right.
Like, and they were in every row.
Yep,
every row.
Fuck, man.
Every row.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. One, it's a beautiful place. Like it is.
Yeah.
It's hard to coalesce because you're looking at it from just the pure aesthetics. It's beautiful, but then it represents so much tragedy and so much pain. So you're like, for me, I had a really difficult time trying to balance that.
Arlington's the same way. It is beautiful, and then you like snap out of it for a second. Like, oh God, why is it so beautiful? Where is the beauty coming from?
And then deeper, right? Yeah. It's like aesthetically, you're looking across the horizon and all the crosses with the contrast between the white on the crosses, the green,
yeah,
beautiful grass.
And yesterday, the beach, blue sky. The
bright, beautiful blue sky and the ocean down below. And then you think about the individual, like pure terror and pain that each one of those things represents, and then the compounding effect of thousands of moments, and then the culmination of thousands of seconds represents hundreds of hours of fucking pain.
How about the cascading impact on family, a brother or a husband or a son, and how that changed the family trees throughout the course of history?
We're two generations removed. Yeah. And do you see the guys with the first ID? They had they'd taken a index of all of the people that died from that unit, and they're going from gravestone to gravestone and shooting a shot. Did you see? There's about 25 of them. They obviously.
Is that what they were doing?
That's what they were doing. They'd walk up.
They were taking a shot at each gravestone.
That's right. No, they were taking turns because
I was going to say, dudes. Did anybody send an ambulance? Because they would be dead.
But they were sauced. I mean, they were
probably the first row. Jesus.
Jacked. They're like, one guy would say a thing and they'd read the dude's name. They'd as best they could what happened to him. And then that guy would do a shot. And then they'd go to the next one. And they just kept going through
place after place. I hope they have some electrolytes today because that's a rough day.
But that was all of the magic that was happening throughout this whole entire week. Was just like, I would have never known that happened. And how cool, freaking cool is that? To be able to like celebrate. And all of those guys clearly stretched probably across 60 years. There's two or three generations. Because I saw young men in there. I saw like an 80-year-old dude. I listened to this old guy that was like, he wasn't in World War II. Like, he looked kind of Korea War, Vietnam era guy. And dude, he read this dude's name. He read what the paragraph about him. Bam! I was like, sick.
They are extremely hungover right now.
Good God.
Why? Fuck.
But
potentially still shit-faced.
And I know you've both done it. Are there not times where like you want to feel pain? Where like, I want to recognize. I want to, after a fight.
Tim. If I were to pull out a doll, would you be able to touch where somebody has hurt you?
After a fight, I'm getting my face sewn up. And they come and like, hey, we're going to do a local there. And I was like, nah.
It's okay.
No, I don't want a local there. Just sew my face up and I want to feel it. And like, all right, well.
That's why we do hard things. Like all three of us do hard things in our own respect.
Yeah. There's a reason for that. It's because like we want to remember it. Our brain, like there is a purpose to pain. I'm literally writing a book called The Purpose of Pain. And those men this morning, the hangover that they have, I bet they have a smile at their face for every shot that they took and every one of those gravestones that they walked to, all 25 of them rotating person after person, taking a shot at each of those, and the pain that they're experiencing and the celebration that they had of that person's life and their sacrifice. Yeah, send it. Give me some of that.
Well, guys, thank you for being here. I really do. Like I've said it multiple times, like, fuck, I just love the fact that we got to do this together.
This is wild.
I think that's a good place to end.
Did you want to put like a Act Blue donation link in the show notes?
Oh, yeah.
See, I feel things.
That was good. We felt humor. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Cool. Hour. I told you guys.
Ooh, perfect. Right on.